Welcome to Education Currents, a show designed to provide educational news and commentary from a Christian worldview. The greatest resource any community has is its children. And by providing for them the best possible education, we are providing for ourselves and future generations. Join us as we explore the latest social and political issues surrounding education today.
Welcome, welcome. I'm Dr. Rose Gamblin, and today we're going to look at ways to regain our joy. Now, if you've ever been in a sad situation, and I certainly have been, you will want to regain your joy. After all, God created us for His joy. And so we're going to listen to some excerpts from a sermon that I did recently on God's tender view and how you can have joy.
God is so good, and it takes us a whole lifetime to really believe it's true. And as I think about the privilege I've had of working with young people, I started actually teaching when I was in the eighth grade. I think I mentioned that last time I was here. But officially on the books, I started in 1979, so you can do the math. And it's taken me a whole lifetime to realize that I have learned much more from my students than they have ever learned from me. Because we start out with childlike faith, and then life happens. And it's so easy for the cares of this world to really steal our joy. So I'm going to just talk about four ways that I have learned and regained my joy. You see, you should pray. Number one, you should always pray. You should make every breath a prayer. And if you aren't already doing so, I beg for you to start this week going into your workplace, going into your day, not just having that perfunctory hour with the Lord in the morning, but making every moment an act of worship and every breath a prayer. You see, I started as a young child really believing that God loved me, and I prayed. And, of course, I prayed for what children want. I wanted a dog, and I prayed and prayed for a dog. And families, please be careful. When your children start praying for something, you really need to be wary because God seems to answer children's prayers more than adult prayers. And so I prayed and I prayed, and I got my two younger brothers and younger sister to pray too. And we would pray morning and noon and night. We just knew that if we pleaded with the Lord long enough, he would trump our parents. And guess what? It all happened one Thanksgiving, and we're coming up to Thanksgiving. And I'm so thankful because the little dog that I got was an orphan. He was supposed to be a thoroughbred dachshund, and the store wouldn't take him. They go, his body isn't long enough. He actually must have had some terrier in him because he had the colorings of a dachshund, black with the little brown tips, but his body was the shape of a terrier. And looking back now, I think he was probably one of the dumbest dogs I've ever seen. But he was my prayed-for dog. He was an answer directly from the God of the universe to me. I can remember, you know, emerging into that adolescent, maybe about the age of 11, and I'm reading Steps to Christ, because, you know, my dad said I should read the book. And I'm sitting there, and I'm just rubbing his silky ears, rubbing my dog's silky ears. I've had him now for a few years. And reading that passage in Steps to Christ that says, God speaks to us with the tenderest earthly ties. And I just felt like, hey, you know, God gave me this dog as a token of his love for me. But it was threatened on many accounts. And I'm just going to share the first one with you. We'd had my dog about 2 years, and my parents got a call to the mission field. We were so excited. We were going to go to a faraway country and see things we'd never seen before. We were very poor, and we were going to ride in an airplane. We were so excited. And then my father said, Fritz, that's the name of my dog, Fritz, you know, Fritz can't go. What? We can't take Fritz? We can't take our dog? He's part of the family. We can't take him? No, look at Rose. Don't you love God more than you do your dog? God, dog. So I gathered my siblings and we went out in the field. I still remember the feel of the grass under my knees. And I said, you know, we've got to pray about this because God needs to trump mom and dad again. He's bigger than they are. And so we knelt down in that grass. We go, Lord, this situation is that we want to go to the mission field, and we're going to the mission field because we love you, and we want to tell others about you. But mom and dad say we can't take Fritz, and we really want to take Fritz. And we just poured out our little hearts to the Lord. Please help us find a way to take our dog. So we went back, and we thought we had a really good argument. And we went to my father, and we said, look it, Dad. Have you ever noticed that G-O-D backwards spells D-O-G, God, dog? They've got to be related, and we really think that God wants the dog to go to the mission field too. And my dad goes, well, I know how you feel, but, you know, a dog's just a dog. And so we were just like, Lord, you have got to figure this out. Well, my mother, who was justice, and my dad, who was mercy, found it in her soul to find out how much it would cost to take a dog to the mission field. I'm sure it's more expensive now, but in those days it was $75, which they did not have. And we didn't know how we could possibly do it. But we just kept praying every day. And wouldn't you know it, my brother's bicycle was stolen. And we were so upset because we lived on our bikes. But he hadn't put it up and it was stolen. And so we just, you know, looked all over the neighborhood, asked all our friends, have you seen? They go, well, we think the Joneses over there have it in their backyard. So we went over there. He and I, we peeked through the fence, and sure enough, here was my brother's bike, but it was all the paint. You could see where they'd really scratched the paint. And these were pretty new bikes. Grandma and Grandpa had gotten them for us. And so we went back home. We said, Mom, Richard's bike is over there. We saw it through a hole in the fence. And so my mom walked over there. She knocked on the door. It was kind of a tattered house. The screen was kind of falling off the screen door. It was wood that hadn't been painted for a long time. And the lady came out, and my mother goes, is there by any chance that your son acquired a bike that might be my son's bike? And the mother goes, well, I was wondering how he got that bike. I bet you. And she called her son, and she goes, did you take Richard's bike? And he goes, yes. And the woman goes, well, go get me your bag of money. And so he went and got, he had been saving money, and she took the money, and she handed it to my mom. We took the money, we went home, and we counted it, and it was $75. And my mom looked at my brother, and she goes, which would you rather have, a bike to take to the mission field or Fritz? No contest. We didn't care. We didn't take any bikes to the mission field. In fact, I said, I'll sell my bike too, man. If I knew all I had to do was give up some earthly possessions to take my dog to the mission field, well, I would have done it sooner. So our dog got to go to the mission field. In fact, he got to ride in a seat there, right on the airplane over the ocean, just as happy as could be. And the stewardesses and stewards just waited on him as if he was a, you know, elite passenger. So that's a whole nother book, maybe, of all the experiences I had with my dog, Fritz. But I began to realize at a very young age that God uses animals. And as I worked with young people, I realized that one of the things that prevent them from really looking forward to the second coming is the fear that their pets don't get to go with them. Where did that idea ever come from? Why do we continuously believe that God doesn't care about our pets. He cares about the sparrows. He gives us our pets to show us his love for us. They're tender earthly ties. I mean, I don't know how many of you have a pet. Are there any people in here who have pets? And you love those pets even when they mess up things. You might get pretty mad at them, but I bet you still love them. You still buy them food. You still take care of them. I think one of the ways God shows his love is through our pets. And I hope that as you study your Bible, as I have studied my Bible, I see it more and more. God, in the great illustration of the flood, he saved animals along with human beings. When Job is going through his trial, God's saying, hey, I've got this, Job. Didn't I create the Leviathan? And some people will say it was some prehistoric creature like a dinosaur, but it was a water creature. Didn't I create the Leviathan? You know, I'm God, and you don't need to be so worried about things. And so I then comfort those who lose their pets, who lose these earthly ties that God has used to show them his love. I comfort my students, my fellow peers. You know, God gave you that pet to show his love. But he really wants you to know that he's capable of recreating that same earthly tie in heaven. He can do it. He tells us in Romans that all creation waits expectantly for a redemption. All creation. Isn't that a fantastic promise? We don't have to be thinking that it's only us little human beings that are waiting. All creation is waiting expectantly. So pray, pray. We're going to take a break right here, but when we come back, we'll talk about the second way we can find real joy. We'll be right back. You've been listening to Education Currents. Be sure and like us on our Education Currents Facebook page and consider joining MRG Media in this radio ministry. You can call us anytime at 301-824-3162. That's 301-824-3162. Or write to MRG Media at P.O. Box 413, Smithsburg, Maryland, 21783. That's P.O. Box 413, Smithsburg, Maryland, 21783. Welcome back. I'm Dr. Rose Gamblin, and today we're looking at God's tender view and the ways you can regain your joy. Number two, don't judge others. It's simple as that. God says not to judge other people. In fact, he says we often try to take that little splinter out of our neighbor's eye, and we have a big plank in our own eye. He uses that illustration. I think of myself as a young teacher in 1979. I was so arrogant enough that when parents would come to me and say, can you give me some advice? You know, I'm having problems with Johnny. I would give them advice. Who did I think I was? Well, God showed me because he gave me my own children then. See, I didn't have children. I knew all the answers before I had children. Then after I had children, I no longer knew the answers. Because I had one child who we would do this at worship time. We'd go presenting, and I'd say, presenting Rod. And he would come out from behind the couch, and he would stand there straight as a stick and sing, a mighty fortress is our God, and sing all kajabillion verses of it by memory. Fantastic memory. And that was his presentation. That was his worship for the evening. And then my daughter would come out and start dancing around the room, doing ballet moves and going, I love you, Lord, I love you. I love you so much. And I'm going, she's dancing, you know? And so I began to watch them, and I'm going, each one of them is expressing their love. And who am I to judge? Do they not have their own relationship with God? In fact, when does that relationship begin? Don't we believe that when the baby is formed in the mother's womb, God talks about forming it in the mother's womb? God talks about forming it in the mother's womb. He has a relationship with that child that he's created, and he loves them for the way he's created them. How can I judge how he's created them? And don't we put ourselves up continuously judging others? Well, we just, you know, we have the best intentions. But it says don't judge. So I have learned, really, and I'm still learning, not to be judgmental. And maybe there's a difference between judging and not being judgmental. Pray. Number one is pray. Number two, don't have that judgmental, fault-finding, scrutinizing, criticizing attitude. Doesn't that just tear a church apart? I've seen churches that got in a big up. They were just so upset because one person wanted to put a cross. I know you have a cross here. One person wanted to put a cross in the church, and then another person didn't want to put a cross, and that became the big war in the church over the cross. And then another church I was in, it was the color of the carpet. The color of the carpet became such a polarizing issue that it really created this nitpicky, just a horrible spirit in the church. And then when I was in North Dakota, a cow got into someone else's field, and that issue was brought into the church. So we have a little saying at school, you know, what happens at home stays at home. What happens at school stays at school. I mean, it's within reason, of course. I don't want them to think we're trying to be secretive at what happens at school. But as far as the issues, what happens at home needs to stay at home. I'm not going to. Oh, number two is don't judge. Number three is follow the directions first time given. And this is kind of a saying that we say. Follow directions first time given. Follow the directions first time given. And it kind of has a neat rhyme. Well, I didn't know how much to heart my students were taking that until a parent came and said, you know, we've been struggling with this dilemma at home, and I've just been praying about it. Finally, my daughter told me, Mom, you just need to follow the directions the first time they're given. And I'm not sure what it was applicable to, but the parent felt like that little saying was very applicable to her. So I don't know. I don't know any other circumstances, but I do know that if we follow the directions the first time God gives them, that it serves as a great protection. And I always think of what my mother would say, which was, if you don't have anything good to say, don't say anything at all. And that's a great little thing to remember. And sometimes you find yourself, you know, biting your lip, biting through your tongue, but if you don't have anything good to say, don't say it at all. Okay, number four. Peace. You only have peace when you don't have fear. Peace is in place of that fear. And if you really pull back the onions of your psychic, any one of us, you'll find layers and layers and layers of fear. And I am probably one of the most fearful people of all. But I've learned by watching my students and praying that gradually the fear starts subsiding. I am writing a book called The Chicken Came to School. And of course, the chapter that the book's named after is about an actual chicken. We hatched eggs, and one chicken hatched out black. And one of the students said, you know, can I have it as a pet? And I said, yes. And she named it Midnight. And then she always wanted to bring her chicken to school. And so I would say, okay, on Friday you can bring your chicken for show and tell, but I don't want it disrupting the classes. And so it can be in a box in my office, kind of like what we still do. It can be in a box in my office until show and tell time. And the chicken would inevitably get out and start walking around the school looking for Marty, its owner. And inevitably, the school board chairman or the conference superintendent would come, and here's a chicken walking around the school, and they would say, you know, why is there a chicken walking around the school? And then we'd scramble, find the chicken, and get it back in its box. Well, that became a metaphor for me. I was quite scared. It's scary to get up in front of a bunch of students. I mainly have taught 7th through high school, and those ages challenge you. They are looking at who they are, and they are very interested in what each other thinks. So, you know, there's a lot of things you have to deal with, and it's pretty intimidating. And then the Lord said, okay, now you've kind of gotten through that. Or maybe man said it, because there's this idea that if you can teach 7th and 8th grade well, you would make a good principal. So then going into principalship and going to board meetings and just, it's very scary. I mean, you can feel your hands sweating. But God says in his word 366 times, do not be afraid. Don't fear. Let not your heart be troubled. 366 times, that's one promise for every single day of the year, including leap year. Isn't that wonderful? Don't be afraid. We know now that the hormones that your body lets off in a fearful situation are good for that short term if you have to run, fight or flight. But over the long haul, they do a lot of damage. And so you have to take that and replace it with God's peace. Satan is going around like a lion, seeking whom he can devour. And if you're afraid, if that fear, you're just going to stand in the road and get run over. That's all there is to it. Because fear freezes us. It absolutely makes us immobile. And so each day, each breath as we pray, we must pray for God's peace, and he will give you the peace that absolutely passes understanding. So the four things that I've talked about today, and there's many more, but the four for today is pray. Make every breath a prayer and every act you do a form of worship. Don't judge, lest ye be judged. Follow the directions first time given. And the main direction that God has given us is, let not your heart be troubled. Ye believe in me, believe also in him. For in my Father's house are many mansions. If it were not so, I would have told you, because I go to prepare a place for you, that where I am, there ye may be also.
Thank you for spending this time with us. You know, we come to you every week just praying that somehow our words will come to your heart and speak a word of encouragement. And maybe today you've reclaimed your joy. And we have one last thing to say, and that is keep learning.
You have been listening to Education Current, a production of MRG Media Ministries. For more on this or to contact us, go to MRGMediaMinistries.com. That's all one word. MRGMediaMinistries.com.